You're listening to the Chronicles of Aguna, the Arsenal podcast.
I'm Martin Tyler, and you're listening to Harry Simeon.
Hello and welcome back to another live edition of the Chronicles of Aguna, the Arsenal podcast, brought to you by 90 Min. As ever, I'm your host, Harry Simeon, and this is our final Euro 2020 based show. We're going to be reacting to the final. Italy, of course, crowned champions of Europe after they defeated England in a penalty shootout at Wembley. English hearts were broken. Everybody was convinced it was coming home. And in the end, ended up going to Rome. We're going to dig into the game. We're going to talk about Gareth Southgate's selection. We're going to talk about some of Gareth Southgate's in-game decisions. We're going to be giving some credit to the Italians as well, because they certainly deserve it. They were the best team in the tournament. I think most sensible fans out there would agree with that. We're going to be discussing our boy, Bukayo Saka, the situation he was put in. Should he have been put in that situation at just 19 years old? Having never taken a penalty for Arsenal, by the way, up until this point, should he have been put in that position? There's been a lot of sort of back and forth about that, people slagging off Jack Grealish and some other senior players, me included last night. I couldn't get my head around why Jack Grealish, for example, wasn't on that initial five penalty takers. Grealish has come out today and denied that he said he didn't want to take one. So there's lots and lots to get into. I'll be taking your questions as well throughout the broadcast, and I'll be sharing with you guys the three things I'll miss about the Euros and the three things I won't miss. So lots lined up for you. Let's say a big hello to those of you joining us in the live chat, to the Modern Gooner, to Callum, to Omar, to Nico, to Michane, to Michael, to Gerline. Lots of you in the chat joining us live at the moment. Hope you're all well. And that's just the ones I can see the names of. So thank you and welcome. Let's talk about the game in general, right? Because there's kind of been this sort of this notion that because England lost on penalties, they must have been extremely unlucky and in some people's eyes deserve to win the game. I put a tweet out last night and I'll just share it on the screen for those of you who maybe didn't see it. Let me just share my screen now for those of you joining us on the video. And if you're listening via the audio, don't worry. I will share it with you as well. So this was the tweet, right? And I put this out just after the game ended. Italy dominated and England offered very little after taking the lead. Too conservative from Southgate and his players. I think you have to say so. Penalties are not just a lottery. It's about holding your nerve, and the Italians came out on top, deserved winners of the championship. And in that tweet, I shared a screenshot from the BBC Sport match stats page. Italy, 66% possession in comparison to England's 34%. Now, I know possession's not the be-all and end-all, right? We've had this discussion in the past. But England were at home. England are the side supposedly packed with lots of attacking talent, yet they weren't brave enough, or maybe they couldn't do it. Maybe they weren't capable of controlling the game of football. Italy, 19 attempts at goal in comparison to the six that England managed. Just 13 more attempts at goal, six on target. Yeah, they committed more fouls, etc., etc. But my point here was that Italy were the better side over the course of the 120 minutes of football. They had to deal with a side who had home advantage. They had to deal with a squad that many of us probably feel is a little bit deeper and a little bit stronger. And they did it brilliantly. And I thought Roberto Mancini managed the game expertly. And remember, he lost Federico Chiesa, who looked, didn't he, sort of just before he went off, as the guy that was going to be the difference, if anyone, and prevent the game going to penalty shootout. So the point I'm making here is that I can't believe the backlash I've had on social media for suggesting that Italy were the better side on the night. I can't get my head around why people would disagree with that. I get the loyalty, right? I get that you want your country to win and you should, you know, I get all of that. What I can't get, though, is the delusion that comes across some people when they're reflecting on football matches to the point where they don't even actually know what they've just seen unfold in front of them. As I say, Italy were the best side in the tournament. In my opinion, they schooled England in a number of ways, in a number of areas. Roberto Mancini had to deal with injury problems, with a lot of issues, players not being 100% fit, changing people around. How many times did he shift that front line around? You know, first it was Immobile up top. Insigne was in there for a bit. And then, you know, you'd see different things. Bernardeschi had come on and he started to play through the middle for a little bit as well. So Italy were constantly having to change things. And I thought they managed the game brilliantly. Let's go on to the team selections, because Gareth Southgate sprung a little bit of a surprise. Maybe a surprise is the wrong term, but what Gareth Southgate decided to do was he decided to move away from the back four that had actually suited England quite well in recent games. Now, I get that people were kind of a little bit scared of Italy and people were worried about the threat that they would bring to the table. But I thought that Gareth Southgate's selection actually worked against England majorly in a number of ways. And we'll come on to talk about that in a second. If we talk about the positives, obviously, you know, the goal came from Trippier getting forward on the right-hand side, picking up the ball in some space and picking up a run from Luke Shaw in from the left-hand side. Because, of course, Luke Shaw, you know, is very effective getting forward. But I talked about it in the build-up to the game. I talked about it on 90 Min. The tendency for the Italian back four to do this, which is just tuck in very narrow, leave space in those wide areas. And so the wing backs were always going to get a bit of joy if they were used in the right way. And you saw it with Shaw. If you watch it back, if you watch the replay, Shaw was able to get into that position because Di Lorenzo's first thought was, you know, I've got to tuck in here alongside Bonucci and Chiellini. So that was something that England benefited from, the way that Gareth Southgate set up the side. But having taken the lead, you know, I think you've got to then find the balance between holding on, not doing anything stupid. You know, many times we've seen finals or games of this magnitude decided by the odd goal. And so I understand the kind of desire and the want to keep it tight and not leave spaces and not leave yourselves exposed. But as I say, it's all about the balance, isn't it? You've got to manage the game properly and you've got to not completely devoid yourself of any threat yourself because you're afraid of what your opponents are going to do. And that's what England did for me. They weren't brave enough in the remainder of the game. You know, they got off to an excellent start, the perfect start. Wembley was absolutely bouncing, but that atmosphere very quickly dropped and dipped and became one of nervousness and anxiousness, because Italy started to control the game, started to dictate play. And yes, they didn't force a massive amount of great saves out of Jordan Pickford. He made a couple. But Italy, were in control and were in the ascendancy at the time. We talk about the England midfield. And I've always said this about Declan Rice and Calvin Phillips. And I've taken lots of abuse, you know, lots of it, because people suggesting that I'm saying that they're both crap players, whatever. I've never said they're both crap players. I've said that neither of them, in my opinion, are capable of getting the ball down with the ball at their feet and controlling the tempo of a game, keeping you flowing, keeping you moving and picking out passes in between the lines into the right areas, et cetera, frequently enough to justify playing with both of them. The fact that you are playing with both of those two guys in the center of midfield shows that you've got the handbrake on. That's what it tells me. And Gareth Southgate has persisted with that because it's got him results in the tournament so far. And I get that. But there had to be a point in that game yesterday, far earlier than Gareth Southgate actually made the change, where he recognized or saw or understood that you have essentially given Italy the upper hand in their strongest area of the park. I don't even think Nicolò Barella, for example, had a very good game yesterday, but you have given Nicolò Barella, Jorginho and Marco Verratti, a top midfield, a better midfield than what England have at their disposal, the opportunity to control the game, to dictate the game, to get on the ball, to not really be pressed when they drop into those slightly deeper areas. and to find their rhythm and find their flow. And that was massive, absolutely massive, in why Italy were able to take control of the game and grow into it and eventually find their equalizer and take the game all the way. You know, the midfield for me is not a top class midfield. And I thought Declan Rice did well in breaking up play a lot of the time. I think that Calvin Phillips physically is a very good player. I like the way, you know, he wins the ball back from people. I think in the Leeds team, he plays a slightly different role and he probably does that a little bit better. But those two as a pairing for me were going to be England's downfall. And I was adamant, absolutely adamant and surprised, actually, that Gareth Southgate felt the need to be so conservative that he would leave those two to deal with the Italian three, who we know are more talented, who we know are better players, who we know are much more technically gifted. I found that a strange decision. And look, a lot of people were talking about Southgate in the build-up to the game and kind of the general consensus having got to the final was he's earned the right to do what he wants in the final because he's made right calls up until now. And I agree, you know, Gareth Southgate has made good calls up until that point. And I don't think when people calm down and look back at this sensibly, you can really tear Gareth Southgate apart. He's taken England to two semi-finals at the two major tournaments he's been in charge of. And sorry, one semi-final and a final. So he's gone one better this time. I think Gareth Southgate deserves a lot of praise. I don't think that this squad is as good as some people made out going into the tournament. I said that from the very off. I think that Premier League bias comes into it when you're assessing some of these players. I talk about Serie A all the time. I'm a massive fan of Serie A. I follow it. I cover it. I work on it. I've got a podcast on it, et cetera, et cetera, which you should subscribe to, by the way, at Simply Serie A. But for me, it was no surprise to see some of these Italian players producing and performing at the level that they did throughout the course of this tournament. It comes as a surprise to England fans, and it comes as a surprise to many others because they don't watch those guys week in, week out. And I get it. Like you can't watch every league in the world. I get that. But there is a bias that comes with the Premier League players that, in my opinion, clouds people's judgment when looking at opponents and setting their expectations for England. For England to get to the final, it's a good achievement. It's a very, very good achievement. For England to get to the semi-final of the last World Cup, it was a fantastic achievement. And the initial raw heartbreak that comes off the back of a defeat like that at the highest level on the most important of stages, that sort of disappointment and anger and upset and anguish, that can cloud judgment. And it will lead to England fans saying Gareth Southgate should be sacked. And it will lead to England fans telling you that Gareth Southgate's absolutely clueless. I disagree with that. I've got to say, he made a couple of calls on the night that didn't work out. You know, but to a degree, the players have to take responsibility for that as well. And to say that England haven't progressed under Southgate would be wrong. You know, it is completely wrong. As I say, a semi-final at the last World Cup, a final this time around. England are in the conversation now among the elite, right? To be in the last four of competitions, the last two of competitions, you've got to be elite. And England are up there now. And we weren't saying this about England a few years ago. You know, we weren't talking about England prior to the 2018 World Cup as a side that were among the elite. Now they are. Now they're punching at that level. They haven't quite got over the line yet, but I think England should not be torn apart. I think there should be an acknowledgement that England were beaten in the end by the standout team of the tournament. I think everybody can agree that Italy were the best team in the tournament. They were fantastic in every way. You know, you look at that centre-back pairing of Chiellini and Bonucci. I can't think of a better centre-back pairing over the last 25 years. Honestly, I can't. They've done it together at club level. They've done it on the international stage. They came into this tournament being written off by everybody. You know, they're too old. They're not mobile enough. They're not this. They're not that. They proved that football is not all about pace and power. And it's why I always say that, you know, people, you know, when people talk about the Premier League and they talk about the intensity with which it's played, I agree that it's different to every other league and it's not comparable to many others. But when we look at, you know, from the outside, we look at sort of players and we say, oh, he won't adapt to the Premier League. He's too slow. He's too... Football's not all about that. You know, we've kind of made it about that in our heads, but it isn't. It's about playing the game cleverly. And those guys do exactly that. They make fouls at the right times. They know when they're in trouble. They recognize that. And they're not too proud to make the challenge. They're not too noble in many ways to make the challenge. You saw that challenge from Chiellini on Bukayo Saka, where he literally pulled him down to the ground. You know, that's the kind of thing. That's the kind of game management that Italy have and England don't, unfortunately. And those kind of things over the course of a tournament, particularly on the high stage in cagey games where games are decided by moments, are massive. I can see a couple of you in the chat sort of asking, Charlie Swanton says, so you're not covering the racism, and player says also not covering Italian fans getting mobbed in London. I didn't say I'm not covering them. I've actually got them on my little notes here. We're going to be discussing both of those subjects for sure, for sure. But we're starting by discussing the game and the football itself, because we're football fans and the other stuff is out of order and it's bad. And we're going to come onto that in a minute. But as a football show, we want to talk about the football stuff. You know, we want to focus on that, you know, because we've got to focus on the good bit. And that's the football stuff. You know, the rest of it, you know, it's a conversation that we've had over and over and over again. It's a conversation that needs to be had and we will get there, I assure you. But bear with us, right? It's normally an hour show and we're only 17 minutes in. So I've talked about England's midfield balance. I've talked about that. I want to talk about the incidents that have just been mentioned. And I want to start off by talking about Bukayo Saka, the penalty, should he have been in that situation? And then we'll come on to discuss what followed after that. For me, I find it difficult to get my head around giving the task of the fifth penalty to a 19-year-old kid who has never taken a senior penalty for Arsenal. I find it baffling, mind-boggling. I can't get my head around it. There's been some talk that, you know, some of the other players should have stepped up. And I said it myself, you know, why have you got Jack Grealish, who's being touted as a £100 million player, who is supposedly going to join Manchester City for an astronomical amount of money, not taking a penalty, and you've got Bukayo Saka being given that task? Gareth Southgate's taken full responsibility for that decision, as I thought he would, because Gareth Southgate is too noble. Gareth Southgate is the kind of person that wants to take it all on his shoulders. He's that kind of character. And I actually think in many ways, he gets kind of a rough ride because of that. You know, it doesn't make sense to me. But on this occasion, when you're reading kind of what Jack Grealish has said this morning, which is he did want to take a penalty. He said he'd take a penalty, but the boss had made the decision. Then you know, in this instance, you can point the finger at Southgate, I guess, but it just doesn't make any sense to me. And I worry about the consequences that this is going to have on Bukayo Saka as a player. I worry about how he's going to react to the abuse that he's received, which will have been like no other abuse he's ever received online, you'd imagine. I'm wondering what kind of reception he's going to get when he goes to Premier League grounds. I think you'd hope that most fans are sensible enough to understand that, you know, it was a penalty shootout and he probably shouldn't have been in that position in the first place. And anybody can miss penalties. But, you know, you don't trust the English football supporters. And when I say that, I don't mean every single English football supporter. I mean, as a wider group, you don't trust a large enough percentage of them to not make a thing of it and to not abuse him for it and to not dig him out when he goes to away grounds. And that worries me. And Bukayo Saka needs us as Arsenal fans to rally behind him, to support him, as many of us have. Many of us have come out and tweeted and sort of made public kind of posts about Bukayo Saka and how sort of proud we are of him and you know, how gutted we are for him, but also, you know, that we recognize what a talent he's going to be and how he needs to probably channel this or try and channel this in such a way where he can learn from it, he can develop from it, he can push on. And that's really important that we as a fan base do that for Bukayo Saka. But I just find the decision to throw him in at the deep end there just absolutely baffling. And remember as well, look, Bukayo Saka will get the heat because he missed the last penalty. Marcus Rashford's penalty was embarrassing. You know, Jadon Sancho's one wasn't good either. Comfortable save for Donnarumma in the end. But Marcus Rashford runs up, takes the stutter, wonders what it is he's going to do and tries to, in the stutter, sorry, work out what Gianluigi Donnarumma is going to do. He expects Gianluigi Donnarumma to hit the deck. That's what he's waiting for. And Donnarumma doesn't do that. Donnarumma doesn't flinch, doesn't give him the upper hand in that battle, doesn't make a move to signal to Rashford where he should be putting the ball. He stands tall. He eventually dives the wrong way. But by then, he's already got in Rashford's head. Rashford has already hesitated, already thought twice about what to do. And he ends up scuffing the shot, dragging it wide off the post. It goes and you know, they miss the penalty. That doesn't, however, you know, for me, it was, you know, a stupid penalty. I think Sancho's penalty was poor. I think Saka's penalty was poor. But that doesn't in any way, justify the abuse that these guys have had. I mean, we've talked about Bukayo Saka, Jadon Sancho receiving it as well. One of England's young, brightest talents, and that's how you treat him. It's completely wrong. You talk about Marcus Rashford. He was literally feeding some of your kids. He was literally feeding some of your kids during the lockdown. And people are abusing him. It's madness. And that is the kind of culture that we seem to have here that I can't get behind. You know, if I had a pound for everybody that's told me during the Euros that I should be supporting England, I'd be a millionaire. Well, I actually feel quite proud that I'm not associated with not every England fan, because there are plenty of good ones out there, lots who are my friends and who I know and who I'm very close with. But there are lots who are absolute morons, and there are way more of those morons than people care to admit. We see it every time. We saw people trying to break into Wembley Stadium, barging through people, stewards who are literally just there trying to earn a living so that they can take care of their families, being pushed to the ground and being barged out of the way and bundled over by grown men trying to get into a football match because they couldn't get a ticket. It's not on. We saw scenes all over London yesterday, and I highlight London because I am in London. But we saw scenes all over London of drunk idiots throwing things up in the air, you know, throwing bottles of drink across the squares, throwing things at people's cars, jumping on people's cars. I don't associate with these people. And you know, there are a lot of England fans, as I say, that aren't like that, that genuinely care about the team, that genuinely care about the football. But there is too much of a percentage who are only interested in having a piss up, smashing things up, vandalizing shit and doing it all in the name of our sport. And it drives me absolutely mad. Every country, right, in the world has idiots. Every country has good people and has bad people. That's fact. Right? So this is not me getting on my high horse and saying, oh, you know, it's only England. No, it's not. But we've got a massive fucking problem with it here in England. And we always seem to be the first ones to highlight an incident of racism in another country and condemn it and make a massive issue about it. Like should be done. You know, it should be condemned. There should be an issue made out of it. But maybe some of that effort and some of that energy needs to be focused on getting our own fucking house in order, because it's not in order. It's far from it. And you've seen it again You've seen it rear its ugly head again. That's my issue. That's my issue. English football has a reputation for this. And people will tell me that it's an unfair reputation and it's wrong and it's, you know, picking on a group of people just because of the actions of a few idiots and all that. But there was way more than a few people misbehaving yesterday and using our sport as an excuse to be complete and utter arseholes. And this is the problem. This is the problem. We can say the reputation is unfair, yet every time a tournament comes along or every time something comes along, there are issues, there are incidents that we, and then as sort of the British people having to look and go, you know, I'm having to sit here this morning on a podcast and distance myself from those people. I shouldn't have to do that. You shouldn't have to do that. Your kids shouldn't have to do that. Nobody should have to do that. But these people are idiots and they let us down every single time. And I can't get behind that. I just can't. I'm sorry, I can't. Let's say a big hello to a few of you in the chat. I will take some questions in a few moments, I promise. Went off on a little bit of a rant there. But I want to say a massive thank you to Mariano Marino for your very kind super chat donation. Two very kind super chat donations, mate. Thank you all so much for that. Really, really appreciate it. Don't forget, if you haven't hit the like button already, please do so. It really, really does help. Let me just check where we're on, what we're on in terms of like, because we've got over 200 of you watching us live right now on YouTube alone. We've only got 46 likes. Let's try and get that up to as close to 100 as we possibly can. If you haven't subscribed to the channel already, please do so. And if you fancy becoming a member and supporting me to bring you more content, you can do that as well. So yeah, look, the racism is a major issue. And it's a huge issue. And I really feel for the guys that are on the receiving end of that, because the people who are doing it with zero accountability. You know, they're doing it from social media accounts, nameless social media accounts, profile pictureless social media accounts. And as I've said on many occasions, I think you've got to, absolutely got to make social media a place where people have to identify themselves so that they can be held responsible for their actions. Those people would not go up to Marcus Rashford or Bukayo Saka or Jadon Sancho and make monkey chants in their faces on the street. They wouldn't do it because they haven't got the balls to do it. They do it because they know they can get away with it. They can hide behind social media. And that needs to change. It really, really needs to change. It's horrible. Those people are letting the country down, you know, and, you know, it could have been so different. You know, those three guys, you know, three young black guys could have stepped up and won England the Euros, and the narrative would be so completely different. And that's, you know, that's the issue here. The narrative shouldn't be that different one way or the other. It's about, you know, coming together. It's why so many people, you know, have sort of been sort of complimentary of Gareth Southgate, sort of bringing the nation together, making sure that he took a strong stance on the whole kneeling thing. But this stems, and it, you know, I don't want to get into this too much because it's not a political show, but this kind of does stem a little bit from the government here in the UK as well. You know, you've got government figures of the high profile sort of condemning the taking of the knee and kind of suggesting that it is deeper, that it is some kind of political thing. It's not. I can guarantee you when Bukayo Saka takes the knee, he is not thinking about politics. He is thinking about eradicating racism for our sport. And that is what it is about. It's not about anything deeper than that. And so when you've got politicians condemning the players for doing that, so telling everybody that it's wrong, then they're on social media the next day wearing England shirts and telling everybody how proud they are of the nation and proud they are of those players. It's hypocritical and it stirs crap, in my opinion. There you go. I can see Deepak Patel not happy with me talking about the racism point. He says, too late, you're really wearing the point of racism out, Harry. We really get it. Well, people don't get it, do they, Deepak? Because it happens all the time. So not enough people get it. And that's why we're discussing it. It's important. It's a massive issue. And, you know, England performed very well at this tournament overall. They got to the final. Okay. It's only the arrogant people that thought that England were not, you know, were never going to lose yesterday or never had a chance of losing, that had convinced themselves in their minds that it was definitely 100% coming home. Any sensible football fan out there understood that it was a 50-50 game against a very, very good Italian side. This is the big point to come away from what's happened yesterday. This is the big point. We should not have three young lads who stepped up at a crucial time for their country being abused. And it's not too late, and it's not wearing the point out, because until it stops, the point is relevant and should be made as many times as possible until it is dealt with, because it's not been dealt with. Big thank you to Inny for your very kind super chat donation as well. It says, thank you, Harry, for speaking out against the abuse. As you said, there isn't any enough accountability on social media or in real world scenarios. A few of you may be suggesting that the ID thing on social media, you know, isn't going to work. And talking about what it is that you need. I'm not saying that, just to be clear, I'm not saying that you have to upload your passport details on social media for everybody to know. I think you should have to give your name, and you should have to give an address. Not for the public to see, not for everybody to be able to view. But there's got to be something that makes you identifiable, and how far you want to go down that, how strict you want to go down on that is up to the authorities. But I think there's got to be something. There has to absolutely be something that allows the authorities to find these people, because they log on, they make fake accounts, they use things to change their IP addresses, they use VPNs, etc., etc., and you're never going to find them. You know, they just disappear into the abyss. Like, there's got to be something for me. Inter says someone's knocking on your door now. I think someone's hammering in the garden next door. I've got the doors open because it's muggy and stuffy again. There's back to the social media thing. There's got to be something that helps the authorities. That helps the authorities identify these people. How far you want to go on it, whether it's passports, driving licenses, or just a genuine name, or you have to verify the mobile number, or, you know, there's so many things you can do to give people at least a lead on who it is that's committing this abuse, even if it does require a bit of further investigation. But there's got to be a lead somewhere to help people, in my opinion. Right, we're going to take questions in a minute, because there is just one more thing I want to do, and one more thing I want to touch on, and I want to talk about, as I said at the beginning of the show, the three things I'll miss about the Euros and the three things I won't miss now that it is all over. So the three things I'll miss are almost daily football for the next month or so. Remember, we've got a few friendlies in the pipeline, but they're not quite the same for me. I think you start getting excited about the new season a little bit later on in the preseason, for me anyway. But I will miss the kind of volume of football that we've been, you know, we've been blessed with over the last sort of month or so. I'm going to miss the Italian national anthem, because putting aside like the fact that I like them as a team and the fact that I like Italian football, I mean, come on, we've all got to be honest. There isn't a national anthem out there like it that is sung with anywhere near as much passion. It's one of the true beauties of international football. And probably the biggest thing I'm going to miss is the good officiating that we've seen throughout the tournament. Yeah, there've been a couple of moments. You know, there've been a few moments where I've kind of gone, not sure about that decision, or was that right or was that wrong? But I think overall, you have to say that the standard and the level of officiating during these European Championships was much higher than anything we've seen in the Premier League over the last couple of seasons. And it has restored my faith in the fact that I think VAR can now be used better. And VAR is not a complete car crash disaster that's going to ruin the sport we love. I think there are differences, and as fans, we're going to have to accustom ourselves to sometimes maybe holding back on a celebration, etc., etc. But VAR has worked, not flawlessly, but much smoother during these European championships. And that's a massive positive. And I can't say with any degree of certainty that we're going to see that level of officiating upheld when we kind of go back to the Premier League. Three things I won't miss: being told who I should and shouldn't support. That for me is driving me mad. It has driven me mad throughout the tournament. I've explained before the reasons why I don't feel a connection with the England side. And I think what occurred, you know, over the last sort of 24 hours, even if it was from a small majority of idiots, has probably made me feel even more disconnected. So I'm not going to miss that. I'm not going to miss people DMing me every time I tweet something or post something saying, oh, why aren't you supporting England? I'm not going to miss that one bit. I'm not going to miss it's coming home. England fans insist that it isn't out of arrogance. It isn't something that is born out of that, and that it is born out of pain and hurt. And that's where the song come from. And I get all of that. But I don't think people doing a good enough job of conveying that when they go around telling everybody it's coming home all the time. And that's why the Italians, and I'm sure anybody else who would have played England and perhaps beaten them in the final, have latched onto it. It's coming Rome. It's coming Rome. You see Bonucci screaming it down the cameras. Maybe that's a little bit of a sign that it needs to stop now. It's dead. Move it on. Get something else. And the other thing I won't miss is people misbehaving and using football, our sport, as an excuse for it. Those are the things. Three things I'll miss. Three things I won't miss. It has been a great tournament. Has been very enjoyable. It's been great to see fans back in the stadiums, especially in such big numbers. I'm delighted about that. And I'm looking forward to the new season now, more so knowing that we're hopefully, fingers crossed, going to be in a position where we do have crowds. Football without crowds is nothing. It's half the spectacle. And so delighted that we're gonna get that back. Right, let's have your questions. Get your questions in the live chat. Pop a little cue at the beginning so that I can find them easily, because the chat is popping off at the moment, which is great. We'll quickly check in on the likes while you do that. Let's have a look. Where are we at right now? Bearing in mind, there's over a couple of hundred of you watching us live on YouTube alone. Big hello to those of you who will be listening to this back on the replay, or to those of you who will be downloading it via the audio platforms. If you are on those platforms, please do leave us a review. We've got 69 likes at the moment. Let's get that up to as close to 100 as we possibly can. Got some dislikes as well, but I expected that, because every time I talk about something like racism, that happens. People start disliking the video. People start, getting sort of defensive about it. In all honesty, though, I couldn't give a shit, because it's an important issue that needs addressing, that needs discussing. I'm not going to shy away from it because a few people out there don't like it. It needs to be done. It needs to be said. The message needs to go out there. And anybody who's got a platform, in my opinion, has a responsibility to address those issues so that we can stop them arising in the future, or at least try to anyway. Right, let's go over to the live chat. Let's pick out some of your questions. Westbird says, what's your opinion on the decision to go with three youngsters for the three final penalties? Should the senior players have stepped up? Did Southgate get it wrong tactically in the second half? I think that Southgate did get it wrong. It's easy to say that in hindsight, but I just don't feel like penalties is all about technique. I feel like penalties is about 50% is about your technique, but 50% of it is nerve, maybe even more, is keeping your nerve, is keeping your cool, is being able to handle the pressure and then allowing your talent to shine through once you've kind of managed those nerves and the situation you're in. I think it was the wrong decision, but, you know, hindsight, as I say, is a wonderful thing. You know, Marcus Rashford has played at the highest level for a long, long time, is a key part at Manchester United. That one wasn't shocking to me. Jadon Sancho, you know, people haven't watched a great deal of him, seen as he's been at Borussia Dortmund for a few seasons on his way to the Premier League, but he's another player who's played on the highest stage. That one wasn't strange to me either, but the decision to put Bukayo Saka at fifth for me was madness. You know, Sancho and Rashford have taken penalties in their careers. Saka's never taken one. So to put him on the fifth penalty was mind-boggling, in my opinion. Did Southgate get it wrong tactically in the second half? I actually don't have too much issue with the way Southgate started the game. As I said at the top of the show, I thought it brought positives to England in the early stages and during the early exchanges. But I think Southgate was poor in reacting to what Italy were doing, and that was completely controlling the midfield and constantly changing their front line and changing players to be able to make sure that they maintain that dominance. They couldn't turn it into a second goal, and I thought they were extremely unlucky to lose Federico Chiesa, because I tell you what, every time he got on the ball, he looked like he was capable of doing something. I don't think Southgate got it wrong necessarily from the outset. I understand the reasons he went with what he went with, but I think when you see how the game panned out, you see that the way Italy controlled the midfield, and you see that England were just completely passive and in my opinion, toothless. I think that he, you know, you have to say that he probably should have reacted a lot quicker than he did. Right, let's go back over to the chat. Claire Lee says, keep Southgate. He can do better for England in the future. I actually agree that, sacking Gareth Southgate would make no sense to me. As I say, there's been clear progress under his management. He's taken the team from, being a bit of a laughing stock to, go into the World Cup and reaching the semi-final stage. And then he's taken the side to a final of the next championships, so I think it would be incredibly harsh to sack Gareth Southgate. And if he is sacked at this point, it is because, as I've said previously, the expectation of this English team just simply outweighs what they're actually capable of. And that's my issue. Bandeliz says, if England choose to move on from Southgate, who would you think would be best to take over and take England to the next level? It's a really good question. It's one I can't answer, if I'm honest, because I haven't really thought about it, because in my mind, Gareth Southgate shouldn't be sacked. But it needs to be somebody in the ilk of Southgate, somebody maybe with a little bit more tactical nous, but somebody who is, a good man manager like Southgate is, somebody who can kind of bring the nation together as much as possible, because I think Gareth Southgate's done an incredibly good job of bringing the media on his side, bringing, the group together. He stands up for his players on the issues that he needs to stand up for them on. And that obviously breeds sort of confidence between the players and the manager. It builds a relationship. So I think it's got to be someone of the same ilk. I think international managers have to be quite different to club managers. I think it's a different job entirely. I think you've got so many relationships to manage, not just with your own players, but with their clubs. Your medical staff, you've got to keep an eye on what's going on everywhere. I think it's a really difficult job, and one that only certain managers are cut out for. I think Roberto Mancini has done brilliantly to kind of, transfer the skills he had as a club manager onto the international scene and take Italy from failing to qualify for the last World Cup all the way to winning the European Championships in the space of a couple of years. It's brilliant. But I do think, generally speaking, that the two jobs are really, really different. What else have we got here? Matt says, since it was announced that we are the next All or Nothing documentary, Aouar and Maddison have suddenly been heavily linked to Arsenal again. Do we think that Amazon are going to buy these players? Well, I can tell you from speaking to somebody at Spurs, Spurs only made about 12 to 13 million pounds from Amazon in terms of direct payment for that documentary. So I don't think it's enough to afford those two, unfortunately. Let's see what else we've got here. Let's pick up a few. Big thank you to Mariano again for another super chat. Thank you so much, mate. Really, really appreciate it. Pat Moyle says, do you think generally international football has got worse? There used to be five or six countries who were top teams: Germany, Italy, France, Spain, Holland. That's why England do well now. I don't know. I think football at the international level is quite generational, isn't it? In the sense of, a lot of the time, your country can go through a difficult period just purely because they've not been blessed with the same level of talent that they may have had in years gone by. I think there's cycles in international football, right? And I think that England right now have a decent group of players, a good group of players. There's some real talents in there. There's been debates and arguments about whether they've been used to their maximum potential. And I accept that there are, debates etc. But I think it's just the way international football goes. I think there are cycles. And I think actually part of that is why so many England fans are really bitterly disappointed with the way this tournament ended, because there was a real feeling like this is the generation that can do it if anyone's going to do it. But remember, the core of this group are relatively young. The Qatar World Cup is not that far away. And putting all the, as I said, putting all the initial heartbreak and the raw emotion to one side and looking at it logically and looking at it calmly, which I think as a non-England fan, I'm probably in a good position to do. I think there's plenty to be positive about. There's plenty to be excited about. And there's no reason why, having reached a semi-final and backed that up with a final, England can't be contenders in the Qatar World Cup. So plenty to be positive about as well, in and amongst all the crap and all the negativity. Let me pick up. I can see there's some idiots in the comments section. Let me get rid of them. There we go. Out we go. Let's see what else we've got. Let's see what else we've got here. We'll pick out one more question before we move on. There's so many. Let me pick one that I think is relevant. Here we go. Let's go with this one from Serge. He says, why did England part the bus after leading only with a single goal? Didn't they learn a lesson from Mourinho's failures at Tottenham? Yeah, I mean, I guess, you know, we've talked about it already, kind of the whole strategy and the fact that Gareth Southgate was maybe a little bit slow to react to Italy sort of completely taking control of the game. I think that there's a balance to be found. As I said before, you know, I get why you'd want to be cautious. I get why you'd want to be careful. So often these games are decided by the odd goal, and I get all of that, but there has to be a balance. And I think there needed to be some kind of reaction from England and Southgate after it became abundantly clear that Italy were taking over control of the game, and their equaliser was coming, wasn't it? There was a large period of time in which they were really dominant. It was coming wave after wave of attack, not necessarily the kind of waves that knock you off your feet, but it was coming sort of again and again and again and again, and causing England problems, and England were having to defend and play on the back foot. And, you know, ultimately they ended up conceding the equaliser, and Italy had the mental strength and the balls, if you like, to see it through. Their big players stepped up when it mattered, and they took the trophy home. So the trophy is headed back to Rome. There we go. We're going to leave it there, I think. Thank you for your fantastic comments and interaction, as always. Helps the podcast run smoother, and I really, really appreciate it. I know I've said it 100 times already, but please, if you haven't already, hit the like button, subscribe to the channel if you're new. I know that there are some people that don't like that we discuss some of the subjects that we did today. And as I said before, we will keep discussing it until it goes away. That's the only thing. You know, it is not something that you can just brush under the carpet. It is not something that should be ignored. And, you know, for me, it was something I wanted to discuss, and something that I think we should always discuss, because awareness is what is needed. Education is what is needed. And without that, then it will just continue. And if people just want to kind of throw the blanket over it and kind of ignore it and pretend it's not there and ignore the elephant in the room, then nobody will ever deal with it. And for me, I'm dead against it. Castor Gardner says, I've been asking the same question for weeks and I can't get an answer. What question is that, mate? Pop it in the chat now, and I'll pick it up just before we sign off. The chat is constantly updating, so I do miss stuff, and I apologize for that. But get that comment in, and I'll answer it before we go, for sure. I didn't realize that you've been asking for the same question. Let me try and go back up in the chat box and see if I can find it. Is it your question about Rodrigo Bentancur or Arthur Melo from Juventus if we can't get Locatelli? I'm not massive on either of those players. I thought that Rodrigo Bentancur was going to go on to be a better player than he's shown himself to be in the last sort of 12 months or so. It's not to say he's a bad player, but if you're talking about major money, then probably not. I'm not sure that I would. As I say, I like the look of Bentancur when he first sort of came onto the scene at Juventus, but not a big fan at the moment. I don't know. He's not one that kind of excites me or pulls me towards it, if you get what I mean. Arthur, done all right, but it's been probably a bit underwhelming. Would they go on and be better elsewhere? I don't know. I'd be interested to see how they get on under Max Allegri, and then we can make another assessment on those two. But thank you very much for your question. Thank you, as I say, for your brilliant support, for all your comments, for all your questions, and for just tuning in. I'll catch you all very, very soon with more content. We'll be talking Arsenal in the next one because the Euros are over. Congratulations to Italy. Well done to England on a really, really good tournament. I know it feels raw at the moment. I know it hurts, but England did do well. England did do everybody proud. A few idiot fans let people down in the end, but that shouldn't take away from the fact that this team under Gareth Southgate, although you might think he made a few mistakes at the end of the tournament, has done a really good job. Catch you all soon. Take care.
You're listening to the Chronicles of Iguna, the Arsenal podcast.
I'm Martin Tyler, and you're listening to Harry Simeon.